Joining us on the line is head of legal at Corruption Watch, and that is Karam Singh. A very, very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Howard. How are you? Nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak to you. So South Africans are cynical. I mean, it's not as though we haven't lived through the reality of just the most horrendous corruption in the last number of years. But this week did come as a shock, and I read a quote by the head of the Black Business Association where he said, we have become a nation of thieves. A very, very heavy statement. Have we become a nation of thieves?
Oh, gosh, become a nation of thieves. I don't know, Howard. I mean, I understand the cynicism, you know. I mean, I think it's deep-seated, and it comes from decades now, you know, of corrupt practices which effectively have undermined the kind of promise, right, that we had of this rainbow nation with the best constitution in the world. Fantastic leadership. You know, we've had a Mandela month now. I was shocked a bit when I think Tanya was being tongue-in-cheek when she spoke about Jacob Zuma coming back. I mean, I think the rot done in the last 10 years of the Zuma administration under the guise of state capture has really put us in a corruption hole. But, you know, I don't think how would anybody should have been last week. I'm sorry, and it's not cynicism, but I was not shocked by what happened or what the stories that are coming out, because we know that we had these corruption risks in the public sector, particularly around procurement. And in this time of COVID, you know, it's all about now procuring what we need to address the pandemic and the health crisis. So obviously, there was going to be, you know, there's all these funds mobilized now to address this. And given the weaknesses in the system, this was always going to be a corruption risk for us.
We know that in this country, there's been this endemic of corruption for years. But I feel like there's a certain level of shock. We're all not shocked.
Because we think.
But there's a certain level of shock.
Yes, because we think you're not all very well to steal that funding that is just there.
Yeah.
But funding that is needed to fight a pandemic, well, that's just a step
now?
Too far.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what we did think.
Yeah. And what is the significance of Cyril Ramaphosa actually announcing it to the country last week?
I understand the moral outrage. You know, we share it. You know, I think we share it. And I think, you know, when I hear the cynicism, I do get worried, because I think cynicism does kind of draw us out of a discussion around, you know, are we defeated? You know, can we beat this? You know, is there nothing we can do? And obviously there are lots of things that we can do, you know, and the one bit of good news that came out this week, which Tanya didn't mention, was the big statement by Hermione Cronier, the head of the Independent Directorate, around the ability now with the change regulations for the investigative directorate that's investigating corruption to now take evidence and personnel from the Zondo Commission. So that all these issues that are being investigated at Zondo, in theory, now could be ready-made for prosecutions in the NPA, and that wasn't the case.
You're right.
That wasn't the case prior to the change in the regulations. So,
but that's,
you know,
so important. This is important information, and we do need to hear it, because we keep talking about the same thing. Oh, nothing's happening. Nothing's ever going to happen. No one's been arrested. But if there is this progress happening, that's what we need to talk about.
You know, the big challenge I think that we have in terms of the fight against corruption, as Corruption Watch, as the media, is how do we message on this thing in a way which doesn't make people feel completely disempowered? You know, this thing is a lost cause. So I might as well just give 20 Rand for the cool drink because, everybody's doing it. It doesn't make a difference. There's no consequence, right? As soon as we start having some prosecutions, as soon as we have some accountability, okay, people have had to step down now. You know, the MEC for health in Gauteng, in the middle of a public health pandemic, has had to step aside from his position because of this scandal. That's accountability. okay, it's a small step, but it's got to be a step in the right direction.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that it's even a small step, and I'll tell you why. Is that, excuse me, during the Zuma period, we knew very well. Later on, we started to see really what was going on, but there was no accountability. People that were corrupt stayed in power. He never addressed corruption. His famous thing, well, tell me what I did. I don't know what I did wrong. He never addressed it. Whereas Cyril Ramaphosa stands up and addresses it. And we are getting rid of people. Maybe it's not at the speed that we would all like. Maybe it's still disheartening when we see the amount of looting. But it is an open conversation, whereas it never really used to be. We had to rely on all sorts of leaked emails to even understand what was really going on. We've now got the SIU that is involved and dealing with it. Surely we're better off than we used to be.
I think we've made some positive steps. You know, we didn't anticipate the president's speech on Thursday. Maybe the president knew, you know, what was coming down.
I'm sure he did. That's why, I'm sure he knew what was going to be in the papers. That's why he did it.
But I think that there was a push from a lot of civil society organizations, including Corruption Watch, to say, you know, the red flags are here. You know, this is coming, you know, and we've got to address this. So, you know, the SIU proclamation was in the works. You know, he didn't just pull that out of his hat. Mm. And we have been in discussions with the SIU for a while on this. That's an important intervention. It's a proactive intervention. It's a investigation which will take place in real time, right? Usually you get an SIU proclamation 6 months, a year down the line from when the lootings happen, and then it's very difficult to follow the money and to shut it down. So that is a positive development. You know, we've got new powers of the Auditor General now that they can go in and do real-time audits when they're alerted to COVID-related corruption. Mm. So, you know, here and there, Howard, I do think we're in a different moment than the Zuma era. I do think the despondency comes from this feeling that it's within the ANC that this battle is playing out, and that, you know, Ramaphosa's fighting with one hand tied behind his back, because there are all these different factions who've got different interests and different deals, and that, you know, he's got to try to keep that church going and ensure that he doesn't get voted out at the next national conference.
And that's the thing, because I actually wanted to ask if Ramaphosa does have, you know, the political capacity to actually root out corruption, because, I mean, it's been happening under his nose for years, even now, with allegations of Kusela Diko's husband being involved in a PPE, tender. That is very worrying. Does he have the political power to actually root out corruption?
Yeah, sorry, that sounds breaking up a little bit. You know, I mean, I think it's a fair question. I mean, when it comes to the MPA, it shouldn't matter. You know, the MPA is meant to be independent. You know, the police, to a certain extent, the police shouldn't be under the control of the president. You know, so the police need to be able to do their job without fear, favor, or prejudice. So, you know, there are these weaknesses in the anti-corruption infrastructure that we've got so much power residing in the president. I think there is a political will issue, and that's why we're going to continue to see this kind of piecemeal, you know, two steps forward, one step back. You know, maybe after a second election and a second administration, there could be more fearless approach. But I do think it, you know, that there is a reason to be critical of the caution that we see sometimes.
Mm, mm. I am chatting to head of legal at Corruption Watch, Karam Singh. We're going to take some ads, then we're going to come back. I want to find out more about what Corruption Watch is involved with and how they are helping to move this discussion forward. We'd love to hear from you, 134519 or 061-895-1019. I'm in conversation with head of legal at Corruption Watch, Karam Singh. We're talking about corruption during the pandemic. All right, so Corruption Watch has been one of the important organizations that is fighting the corruption and has been dealing with this type of thing for some years. Give us a brief history of the organization.
Corruption Watch was launched in 2012. It's been a few years now. Donor funded. It's a relatively small organization. I think in the scheme of civil society, it's a relatively young organization, but I think we've taken a prominent role in the, in the anti-corruption work. A lot of our lifeblood is receiving reports from whistleblowers. So we have a lot of channels open to receive reports of corruption, which we try to investigate. We do get involved in strategic litigation. We've got a really fantastic communications department. So we produce quite a few reports and publications relating to corruption issues. So yeah, it's a really vibrant young organization. And I think, gosh, Howard, I mean, since the president's speech last week, the demands for comment from Corruption Watch has really been incredible. I suppose it's the relevance comes with the fact that we've got such a, we do have this corruption challenge that we're sitting with, which is on everybody's lips.
How do you get involved? In other words, if people are a whistleblower, they see something going on, they report it to you, what are the processes that you then follow?
It really, really depends on a case by case basis. It depends on the nature of the complaint, depends upon the availability of information. But where we can, unlike law enforcement, we don't have powers. So we don't have power of subpoena. We don't have search and seizure powers. So we're really reliant upon information which is in the public domain, information which we can uncover through our investigations. And then where possible, we can hand some of those investigations over to law enforcement or to other people in authority, such as the SIU, who can have power to action some of those investigations.
And just over the years, what has the trend been in terms of public participation with whistleblowers? When have you had the highest, number of complaints?
Howard, I didn't hear the question.
Yes, so sometimes it's quite hard to hear Zanati when it's on a WhatsApp call. She says, in terms of looking at trends, has there been a time that you've had the highest number of complaints coming through to Corruption Watch?
I'm not sure of the trends report. I mean, there has been high volumes over the last two or three years. You know, we do also deal with walk-ins, people that come into our office in Joburg, and we haven't had that this year. So, because we've been closed because we're all working from home. But yeah, the volumes have been pretty significant. And I think last year was the highest number of complaints received.
And one of our listeners, Linda, says a big noise about the 125 million rand tender, small noise about the 800 million Maponyane medical. So the numbers are staggering. The numbers really are staggering. I wonder, in your view, and it's almost like a philosophical question, does it make a difference in terms of the value, in terms of the quantum? We know the famous American broken window policy that you prosecute for even the smallest thing because that changes. What is your personal or Corruption Watch organization outlook on this?
Yeah, I think, this is a major debate within anti-corruption circles. So there's not really a settled answer. And, part of it is this distinction between what we call grand corruption and petty corruption. So, petty corruption was like your classic multiple instances of corruption, but possibly involving small amounts. So, I worked at the SIU 10 years ago and we had big investigations on the go relating to social grant fraud and in relationship to driver's license fraud. These were kind of small cases, but they were absolutely pervasive and they corroded the system.
Right.
In the Zuma era, we've now become comfortable with this term state capture. But, for me, state capture is just another name for what used to be called grand corruption, which is, corruption organized at the apex of the state, involving cronyism, collusion, between extremely powerful people and strong business interests, in the case of state capture, the Guptas. When you look at what the Guptas did in terms of procurement, how they got into the procurement system, how they got into Eskom and Transnet, the figures are staggering, Howard. You're talking about hundreds of millions of rand. So that has a huge knock-on effect in terms of the fiscus, you know, I mean, look at Eskom. Look at the mess that Eskom is in. You can't tell me that that's not inextricably linked to this period of corruption, maladministration, and poor governance. So, you know, I think both are significant in different ways, right? We need to pay attention to both the challenge of petty corruption, those multiple instances, but we can't say that that has more of a corrosive effect on the economy, on everybody, than the kind of grand corruption that we've seen.
Such an interesting one. You know, we see it in all of our lives on a smaller and larger extent. To a smaller and larger extent, you're driving along a highway and somebody pulls you over and they say, well, I can either take you to jail or you can pay me R100. You know, this is what South Africans are dealing with and facing on a daily basis. My one son it took a while to get his driver's license, and about on the fifth time, he came back and said, Dad, you know, every time, you know, we're paying, I don't know, a couple of hundred rands to book for the next one, I could have bought my license for, you know, for less. And I said, you know, it's just not the point. It's not about the value. You're going to go back again and again and again until you get it the right way. But it was, and I was so relieved the next time that he got it, because it was becoming harder and harder as he was becoming more despondent. And he happened to have been a very, very good driver. So he actually should have got it. But for these are the challenges that even our 18-year-old knows that, hold on, I can actually buy a license if I choose to do that. And it's only because he's got strict, mad parents that we're not going to allow that sort of thing. So it's so much part of our everyday existence.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, I think we need to have an analysis which takes in both of that. You know, the old debate used to be, or the question has always been, is corruption endemic in South Africa? Is it part of the fabric of our society? So for me, that means any interaction that I have with a public official, whether it's getting a license, going to some kind of department to get a permit, does it involve some kind of a request for, you know, corrupt payment. You know, from what you're saying, from what people say, you know, it is incredibly pervasive, you know.
I wouldn't say endemic, I would say pervasive. I think those are two different words. Those are two different meanings. And I do think it is pervasive.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, you know, maybe the response is the same, you know, regardless. But I do think that, you know, we get it, you know, it's a slippery slope, you know.
You can't fight
grand corruption and not deal with these issues that people have to deal with on a daily basis. But you also can't put all of your attention into sort of sorting that out and assume that the elites are still going to do the right thing.
Absolutely right. That is unfortunately where we have to leave it. I could have this conversation with you for hours. We are definitely getting you back. That is Karan Singh. He is the head of legal at Corruption Watch, talking to us about corruption amid the pandemic. It is 8:57. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning.